C7. Number 2B.
Now, we come to a further period, which we could call the Dorley period. And the Dorley period is actually bringing out this very point that oneness must be a scientific differentiated oneness. I told you that his basis was also the oneness of being. But right at the time when he began to see the oneness of being, he began to see something else with a very short time span in between. He began to see that this oneness must have order. That's where he started. He began to see something about that third degree in the scientific translation of mortal mind. That third degree had seven stages, seven qualities, and he began to see something about an irresistible order that was underlying those seven qualities. And then he began to think about the 7 days of creation. He began to see that, Mrs. Eddy says, in the third stage of Christian Science, in the order of Christian Science. What is the third stage? What is the order of Christian Science? He was beginning about thinking about an ordered development. So can you see, right at the beginning, he went a completely different way than Bicknell Young. Whereas Bicknell Young would pull down every differentiation more and more, especially then his students, John Dorley went the very opposite way. He said, here is a big oneness, but that big oneness must have within itself an ordered sense. And so he was looking out for order, and order is naturally the beginning of a system, and therefore of a science. So he began to see that science must have differentiation. And he could see that without this differentiation, oneness goes wild, really wild. And when one reads what the Bicknell Young student, the first generation wrote, and the first generation was also the last generation already, what they wrote, then one really feels they have gone really wild. It really takes something to read the page of what they write, to find out what they really want to say. And they write books without the chapters without title. You have to find out after the end of the chapter what they have been talking about. And it's not easy. It's wild. It's just always talking around the one and everything is one. And naturally this is the easiest thing to write. Just to write that everything is one. So one could experience really what Mrs. Eddy said, that thought loosened from a material basis, but not yet instructed by science. They had loosened their thoughts from a material basis because they said, matter does not exist, all is one, all is spirit. But loosened from a material basis, but not yet instructed in science, may become wild with freedom, and so be self-contradictory. And this is what happened. Became self-contradictory, became wild with freedom, and therefore it could no more be taught properly. And when an idea can no more be taught in an order, and is no more taught in an educational order, it is on the way out. It is on the way out. So Mr. Dorley took the very opposite standpoint. He accepted the textbook wholeheartedly, every statement. Whereas the Bicknell Young student began to question the textbook and accused it to be dualistic in its presentation, to be building on the Bible, which is anyway outdated and which is not true. So John Dorley said, no, I can see that the divine principle interpreted itself and dictated its message to Mrs. Eddy. And therefore, every aspect of the textbook, not only a few aspects of the textbook are important, have the same importance, must therefore be considered, so that we can only give a proper answer to any question if we take in all the aspects of the textbook. And this was the strength of John Dawley's teaching, that he would not prove something through one statement, but that he would prove everything by going through the whole textbook and taking in every aspect of that problem. Now, let's see for ourselves, because we don't want to run into trouble and into a trap with blind eyes. Let's see where the dangers are. What we see is that we have to wed the sense of oneness with the sense of science. That oneness without science is mysticism. That science without oneness cannot stand for a long time. That science without oneness will be a letter sense, an intellectual sense. And so both have to be wedded together. Now what happens? Let's take those two dangers. What happens if we study the science without that fundamental sense of oneness? See, John Dawley had that fundamental sense of oneness cultured through many, many years before, say, 20 years later, in the middle of the 1930s, he began to show the signs of it. He had a great, deep structure in his consciousness of the oneness, and therefore within that oneness he could build in his science. But many of the students that came in afterwards and didn't have first that culture of the science and be taught into the science, into the oneness of it, they began to study right away science without that sense of oneness. And most failed, because they take then the study of the science as an object. It is not the subject. They take it as an object, just as we would take geography or chemistry as an object of learning. And so they devoted a lot of time and studied to the letter and studied science as an object. They didn't yet first have the sense that we are that object, and therefore we are the subject of it. And then such a study grows dry on the student very quickly. After a few years it becomes a word play and a combination of terms and a jungling with terms, and then the interest loses, and it's right that they lose interest. It doesn't grow, it doesn't live in them. So it becomes then a mental system, a letter system, a word system, a crossword puzzles, and you make the crossword puzzles with ideas, and the deep thing is lacking, namely that we are the very thing. On the other hand, if we have just oneness and feel that's all what we need, what do we need more than oneness? Why should there be a scientific system of it? Then we will become very soon mystics. Then we will run wild. And then what happens is what happened to Goldsmith, that he turned mystic. And that happens with many other students who try to contemplate Christian Science just always in its oneness, that they are really drifting into mysticism without knowing it. Therefore, we need both. We need both. A deep sense of oneness, as I perhaps would like to show during this week, and we need a deep sense of what constitutes a science, and if we can wed both together, then we really have a subjective science, and not an object called science or Christian Science. And in order to wake up the students to that very fact, John Dolly had pointed out in his last summer school, he has pointed out that really we must be awake to the fact that there is a great difference between metaphysics and science, that we should not confound metaphysics with science, that metaphysics is only the contemplation of ideas as if they were somehow objective to us. We contemplate the realm of ideas, whereas science, he will point out, is the infinite one contemplating on himself as ideas, and therefore at that point really would show that the infinite one includes, so to say, includes metaphysics, which then is no more metaphysics, which then is divine metaphysics. So let's see that we have a wedding of metaphysics with science in the right way, namely that we have first science, which includes metaphysics. And only in that sense, science and metaphysics is one. If we have only metaphysics, we have not yet science. Just as at the beginning of Mrs. Eddy's career, her students called themselves metaphysicians, and in practice they were mesmerists. They called themselves metaphysicians, but they were not metaphysicians. That's only the term. Factually, they were mesmerists. And in the same way, we have to be clear that we don't call ourselves scientists when we are only metaphysician. Yes. We come to a further point, four, which I may call spiritual monism. Spiritual monism. In the development of the idea of monotheism, somehow during the last 20, 30 years, out of the Bicknell-Young school arose then naturally the idea that Christian Science actually has not so much to do with monotheism, but with monism. That it has not only to do with a one God, but actually with a one universe. So monotheism has only to do with a mono, one God, whereas monism has to do with the only one reality. See, even at Jesus' time, the teaching was indicating monism and not so much monotheism, because John, the great scientist of that time, said God is spirit. That would be spiritual monotheism. God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. So he could see that not only God must be of the nature of spirit, but also man and conscious and the consciousness of man must be of the same nature as God, also spirit, that spirit God must be worshipped through spirit. And that indicates monism. So God is spirit, and his creation is spiritual, and this is spiritual monism. Monism, the term itself, again, is from monos, as we have seen. It means alone, or only, or one, or single. But when it comes to monism, you have no more theo, monotheo, no more theo in it, no more God in it, but just the ism, the teaching, the doctrine of the one. And so monism is defined as a metaphysical system in which reality is conceived as a unified whole. So, monism is just conceiving the universe or reality as a unified whole, meaning that reality is of the same fundamental nature. Can you see the difference between monotheism and monism? Which would mean that monism is a much bigger concept than monotheism, because monism would include actually monotheism and also a creation of the same kind, and therefore includes principle and idea. Now, here I want to point out that again the term monism is not sufficient in order to express the Christian Science concept of oneness. It has become a use in the Christian Science field that round about the 1940s and so on, one began to hear more and more about monism, and that the Christian Science is monism and not so much monotheism. Now, here one has naturally to be careful, because monism does not yet define the Christian Science concept of a one reality. Why? Because there are various concepts of monism. In the philosophical world, we have, for instance, the monism of thinking, which is called idealism. It's the monism of thinking saying that reality consists just of thinking, therefore that reality is a concept of a subjective attitude, and this is called also idealism in the ordinary terminology in the world. But there is also a monism of matter, a material monism, a concept that the whole reality consists of matter. This is materialism, or what is usually called naturalism, that the whole nature of the universe consists of matter. That what is called thinking or thoughts or ideas are but different states of matter, and so they explain everything as material. And you know that this is quite a terrific issue today in biology, that biology has very different lines or teaching schools. The one is saying that life can be explained materially, that life is nothing else but a material concept, and that one can create life and explain life on a completely material basis, based on material laws, of biological laws. Another school in biology takes the other view, that they say life can never be explained on the basis of materialistic laws, that there must be other laws working that have nothing to do with naturalism. So there is in biology both there, material monism and idealism, or the monism of thinking. Then there are other schools of monism, the monism of energy, also called dynamism, or energetics, which says everything is energy. They don't say everything is matter or thought. They say everything is energy, and everything can explain through energy. Thinking is nothing else but an electric wave, waves of energies of a specific kind, that matter is nothing else but energy, which already Einstein has shown. So they explain everything in terms of energy, of waves, of electromagnetic waves. And you know, also the Eastern school always were talking about waves, and everything is waves and waves and waves and waves. This was really the monism of energy or energetics. In recent years, a new school has arisen that is speaking about the monism of abstract relationships, which is also called functionalism. where they say that everything in the universe consists only of relationships. And actually it seems that this is that which comes nearest really to Christian Science, to see that reality consists not of atoms, and not of electrons, and not of parts, and not of energies, but that the fundamental reality are just relationships, and that everything is a matter of relationship. There's already a concept that we can hardly anymore conceive of, but which the physicists are entertaining more and more, because they have been pushed from the material concept of the world into the metaphysical concept of the world, and there they begin to think in terms of relationship. A completely different consciousness than what we have been used up to now, in the way we have been trained up to now. We all who are sitting here, anyway, most of us, there are some perhaps who have not been trained the way, but most who are sitting here, we are trained in the old Greek classical method of thinking about parts, that the whole consists of parts, small parts, bigger parts, or very tiny little parts, but still parts. The new concept of the universe they have now is not so much that reality consists of parts, but of relationships. We can hardly imagine this concept. But you know how in Christian Science we begin to realize that actually everything is relationship. We have been talking the whole of last week when we were considering the synonymous term, we were seeing that actually in Christian Science we don't have to do with parts, namely with terms that would have a meaning, but that we would deal with the synonymy principle, which is relationship, where each term had relationship with all the other terms, and that therefore only the relationship would give to the terms reality and quality and meaning. So that the synonymy principle is a principle of relationship, and reality, we see more and more, will consist of relationships, of ideas. Well, anyway, what I wanted to say is this, that in speaking about oneness, don't fall into the habit of now, instead of talking about monotheism, to speak about monism. We must classify or specify monism and speak at least about spiritual monism, that Christian Science presents spiritual monism. Because we see that God is spirit and all is spiritual. That's Mrs. Eddy's concept. And that, so to say, up to now, that up to now we had always a battle between the Greek proposition that everything is material or everything is ideational. And that struggle, as we have seen, has gone on since the Greek period, and it has changed from time to time, every century changed from one ism to the next ism. And say, last century, the 19th century, was a typical century of deep materialism. And then slowly that broke down with the turning of the century, with the discovery, say, of the atoms and then X-rays, and then came Planck, and then came Einstein, and so on. And the whole thing turned into another direction, into the direction of seeing that everything consists more of ideas than of particles, than of matter. And again, there was a rise of idealism being the main idea of reality. Yes. So here we have the great statement that all is spirit and spiritual. In this short sentence from the platform, we have a sense that the oneness of being consists of a spiritual monism. We have the one indivisible spirit as the basis of our teaching, where spirit is the only, and therefore we have no sense of space or time, where everything is of the quality of spirit, and is spiritual. But if you have that everything is spirit and spiritual, we have an inseparability of principle and idea. And that is the key to the understanding of Christian Science, because it says that therefore an idea which expresses that one being is never isolated, never separate from its principle, and is therefore never a part of that principle. If it would be a part, it would be isolated, could be something that can be broken away from the whole, and therefore the whole would consist of a whole lot of parts, which is not really spiritual monism. And therefore we want to investigate much closer the big statement of Mrs. Eddy, that principle and idea is one, or that spirit and all things spiritual are one.